This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday, Thanksgiving week. Good to be with you today. Matt, Patrick here today. Patrick, how was your weekend? Did you have it? You're wearing your Jefferson jersey in there. I'm presuming you're happy about what happened with the Vikings game.
Oh, I love when they beat the Packers. It makes my whole week better.
Oh, it was one of the things which was delightful is to watch the Packers who, I mean, let's just be honest. I have never seen a team get more ref calls in my, and for 20 years, I have watched these two teams play and watched, you know, call after call go the Packers way. And then all of a sudden yesterday they had the two, the interception, which was the, which then called back because of roughing the passer. At which they said, all the Packer fans jumping online, like, that wasn't that bad. It was helmet to helmet. You got to call that one. That's going to be called. You do helmet to helmet in the league this day, they're going to call that every freaking time. And even though that the guy, it was, you can make an argument he was in the art of tackling, helmet to helmet gets roughing the passer every time. The other one was he did not have control of the ball. And you want to know the truth is, that was a little bit of a questionable one. But at the same time, went the Vikes way. And to act like Packers act like they always screw us. Oh, my God. You guys have always had so many calls go your way in games. So just suck it up. You lost. So that was enjoyable. Very unfortunate, Minnesota United FC, our soccer club. We do not have the dagger. What I mean by that is that great soccer teams have one guy who will – come hell or high water, find a way to score in big games. And we just do not have that. And it's not that we don't have scorers. We do have scorers. We have some very good players. We just don't have that dagger that we need to have to take that next step in Major League Soccer. And these other teams do. I don't know who's going to beat New England this year. New England is just amazing. That soccer team is unbelievable. But it's you know, we're done now for the season. We lost to Portland 3-1. We were up 1-0, and then they just, you know, we just didn't have a response to them. You have to have someone out there who's going to just give me the ball. I'm going to make them pay. And we don't have that. It would be a good thing to get that in the offseason. I went on Saturday night over to Mariucci, man. I was able to go to Gophers Penn State. 4-2 victory for your Golden Gopher hockey squad. When was the last time you were at Mariucci?
I actually have not been there for a Gopher hockey game. I've probably been there for some other smaller hockey tournaments. I know I was at Ritter over the summer, which is next door.
It's amazing to me that their tickets are hard to come by, but you go to a game and I'd say a third of the seats are empty, at least a third, maybe even half the seats are empty. And so I know there are people that basically have their tickets that are just waiting for the Gophers to become good, so then they'll go to games. But come on, you know, it's like it's kind of hard when you go in there. It's like it's hard to find tickets, and all of a sudden it's like you're sitting there and half the midsection on both sides is empty. You know, okay, that doesn't seem like it's, you know, a good way to get fans in the door. I did okay because, you know, I'm on the crutches. And I did okay, although I had to go up the two flights of stairs, then I had to walk the concourse, then I had to go down like three flights of stairs down to the seat, row 13. Okay, that's a little bit of a haul. But got down there, enjoyed it. I didn't move. But by the way, when I got to that seat, did not move for the rest of the game. I sat down. I'm not going back up the stairs and come back down. No, I'm not doing that. I was exhausted by the end of the day. Because that was a day I also went for my first mile walk with crutches, which, you know, I'm actually now starting to get done with the crutches, which is good. With the hip replacement surgery, it's about 4 weeks. They want you kind of done with it. But then I had to go on out because we had leaves off that fell off of trees that after, you know, that should have been down out of the trees 3 weeks ago. I had to go out there and do yard work. I was exhausted by the time I got back home. I was wiped out. But, you know, still managed to get out. Got a walk in yesterday. I went around Round Lake, hello, Eden Prairie. Went a little, about a mile long lake over by Eden Prairie High School. Nice little hike over there. So I hope you had a good weekend. It's a busy week for a lot of people because of Thanksgiving. If you're traveling, of course, be careful out there. If you're driving, know what you're driving into. That's always the biggest thing. If you're flying, patience. Patience. No assaulting anyone on the plane.
And keep your mask on, please.
Keep your mask on. No pounding. Although I will say this about the Gopher game. You know, it doesn't do you a lot of good to have a masks are mandatory at a game when I'm going to guess 75% of the people at that game weren't wearing their mask. They might have worn a mask into the stadium, but they didn't wear a mask at all once they got into their seats. I mean, maybe that's what the problem is. These people get on the planes and they think these mask mandates are kind of, oh, well, they're saying they want a mask, but I don't have to wear it. And then all of a sudden they're saying, no, you have to put your mask on, and they go live it. So drive safe, be safe out there. We, of course, I'm going to be here today, tomorrow. Terry John Zila, our food guy, is here today. We're going to have him at 5:30. We're going to go over Thanksgiving stuff. He's promised me I'll get any recipes we go over. We'll get those and get them posted for you so you can have those if you want to, you know, dine on your own leisure. Brett in on Wednesday. Thank you, Brett. I appreciate that. We got best of shows on Thanksgiving and on Black Friday. And, of course, we are going to be back here on Monday after Thanksgiving weekend. So have a wonderful Thanksgiving there. I'm a little preoccupied because... And I want to be careful here because I want to make this – I don't want to make this about necessarily me and my family and my kids' school per se, because I think that this is something that a lot of parents have to deal with. So my daughter starts texting me today. There has been a fighting issue at my kids' school, and it's been bad. I mean, to a point where the rumors are, and I'll say very clearly there's rumors that – parents of some of these kids are coming in, getting involved in these fights, which is what? That you have faculty and staff getting injured as well. And so it's kind of, and it's the same like 20 or so kids. And we're kind of watching this slow car wreck go on. And what I mean by slow car wreck is this, is that I commend teachers and administrations that realize that the way things have gone is not necessarily the right way for them to have gone. We talk about this a lot with education and testing, that the SATs and the ACTs are basically white European-centric testing systems that generally don't necessarily give a fair advantage to minority kids trying to take a test, understandably. But then you do have some schools that will go in and, as a way to deal with this, will eliminate all advanced classes because they don't want some kids feeling like they're getting left behind. And I don't know if that's necessarily the right angle. I think that you're basically just telling all your kids who are your smartest kids in your school to have to go to a different school if they want to take advanced classes. So, I mean, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You want to address these things. You want to fix these things. You want to fix the rights of the past, the wrongs of the past, and make things right. You want to do that. But at the same time, if you overstep and you're trying to get into this situation where you are, you know, in turn kind of ending up doing more damage than good. And I think it's always a fine line. It's a balance beam. You got to be careful. Years ago, my kids were at a school, and I had to have a long conversation with the then principal of that school about a kid who was, for lack of a better way to say it, I mean, well, and it, I'm not going to candy coat it, was stalking one of the kids that was at my children's bus stop. And it was a very, to a point, a bit of a scary situation. And I kind of... When I talked to the principal at this time about this student, and I just saying, this student is terrified. You know, you've got to do something here. The mentality was diamond in the rough. And you hear this a lot that, you know, do we necessarily punish a kid out of a school district when that kid could be something and have a successful career and a successful life if we're just giving them more leeway? And I said to the principal at the time, I said, I'm not against that. I mean, but there's two problems with that. One is there's a heck of a lot of rough And you want to look at Diamond in the Rough, and everyone falls in love with the story. It's a great movie. It's like the kid that comes through and, you know, makes good and comes a, you know, the head scientist or, you know, the leader of industry. Great. No, that's wonderful. But that's kind of more the exception to the rule sometimes. And I think that that's something that kind of gets glossed over at times. And then the second thing that I think happens is that when you actually have a crime, like stalking, that to then Archie Comics that crap and kind of make it seem like, oh, it's no major big deal. I don't want to really. No. It's stalking. If this was a business environment, that person would be fired, probably been escorted out of the building by security, if not arrested at some point. And you're kind of talking about third, fourth, seventh, ninth, 12th, 15th chances. No. And as I had to tell the principal at that time, I said, you don't want the news story to be, I have no, I kept talking to the principal about this, and they basically didn't want to do anything, and now a tragedy's occurred. You don't want to have that. This fighting problem that's happening at my kid's high school seems to be the same 20, 25 kids. And like I said, rumor mill goes all the time, you know, like alleged, you know, parents involved, you know, staff, administration, teachers getting hit. But the reality is that these kids don't seem to be getting kicked out of school. And I'm like, okay, when I was a kid and you fought, I mean, I don't know how that's, I don't quite understand sometimes what is wrong with saying, well, you're a danger to others. We're going to have to ask you to leave. Now, once again, I mean, I think in this day and age of education, if it's an open enrollment kid, if it's a kid that's coming to the school from outside the school district, that's an easy fix. I mean, it's a privilege to be able to open enroll into a different school. I don't care whatever school district that is. It's a privilege to do so. So if the kid is not basically, you know, living up to the privilege of that, then you kind of revoke that privilege, and then you're not kicking them out of school. You're just saying you have to go to school in your own district or open enroll into a different school district. I don't have any problem with that. But I do have a problem with, you know, rumors. Like there was, you know, one that apparently they dealt with these kids one time after a fight by taking them out to brunch. And that didn't work, you say? Taking him out to brunch for a little pancakes waffle action for getting into trouble. And apparently that didn't solve the problem. Oh, okay. Did you try a hot ham and cheese sandwich next time? Maybe that will do it. I don't know. Like I said, rumors. I don't know what the hell's going on. And in this day and age, you don't know outside of the fact that you're stuck as a parent having to make a choice. Do I trust that the school district is got the best, the safety and security of all the students in mind, or does the school district seem to be determined to basically give some problem students 16, 17, 18 chances, and then they'll put them on detention? Because then you have to ask the question of, you know, when the real problem begins, when all of a sudden, God forbid, if a student brings a gun to school, or if someone gets, you know, killed or seriously injured, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I'm taking it seriously. Really? You didn't see the warning, the breadcrumb trail that we had up to this point? Because I could see that from a mile freaking away. I don't know what we do here. I mean, it's like I said, I understand. We're in a pandemic. We understand that, you know, there's a lot of kids that are frustrated because they're behind in classes. They haven't been around other kids for a while. I get that. This is a tough school year. But I also have to be honest that there's a point of part of me which is like, I need to know that my kids are safe if they go to your school. And right now, I don't know if my kids are safe going to your school. I don't. Because what I see is 16, 17, well, I shouldn't be, and that's an exaggeration. I see multiple chances being given and the same result happening every time. And when all of a sudden my kid is in the school's in a lockdown and they're having to release school early, well, you're not having a lot of success here with the, you know, diamond in the rough approach. So, I mean, there you go. I mean, I think this is the argument. I mean, this is why, I mean, but first of all, this is why teaching is so freaking insane today, is because you have to deal with these dynamics. And I think, once again, I think it's good that we have, we reevaluate how we have addressed punishment in the past, because is it fair to just basically have a zero tolerance policy? I don't think so, especially when the zero tolerance policy has a very traditional way of heavy-handedly being applied to minority students. Absolutely. I think you have to look at that. But I also have to look at, after the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th, 15th fight, Are we trying to start Fight Club here, or are we trying to have a high school? And, you know, it's I trust these people to run the school, to give my kid a good education. I trust these parents and these adults to do this. But it's kind of frustrating to see recurring problems that are not getting addressed. And I think this is something that happens in a lot of places. It's different in wherever you're at school. I mean, I think that, once again, you have dynamics that happen everywhere. And yeah, I'm in the suburbs, and the suburban schools are generally nicer, generally don't have a lot of problems. You know, it's not like I'd rather be in a school district that's trying to change things up, as opposed to some of these school districts. And we've talked about these in the past, where administrations seem to be sticking their head in the sand and acting as if there isn't a racism problem. I think that that's just ludicrous. I think you have to address issues. But I also have to ask the question is, you know, what's the concern? And so this is my conundrum, because I had to deal with this today, and I'm dealing with a daughter, and if I may, and I, you know, it's hard when you read the following three texts. I want to talk about other school options at some point. This is getting out of hand. I don't feel like the school has any kind of control over this fighting. I don't feel safe if people are going to, well, and you know, she was dealing with a rumor there. I want to be careful with that. I don't feel safe. I'll say that like that. I think that if you've got students sending parents text messages like that, you're failing, and you're failing badly. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got a lot to get to with the coronavirus update, a lot to get to. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, what do you do when your kid tells you that I'm scared to go to school? I don't know. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Monday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 4,718 newly reported cases, 37 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID death toll now is 9,192. Minnesota's test positivity rate on the 7-day rolling average through November 12th is 10.9%, which is up from 10.8% on November 11th. Now, as of November 18th, the state reported 3,593,942 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,338,219 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 816,163 third dose booster shots. Through the November 19th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,373. That's actually down from 1,414 reported on November 18th. Of those hospitalized, 330 people are in intensive care. 1,043 are in non-ICU care. The most ICU patients during the duration of the pandemic was 399 on December 1st. There are currently only 24 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state, and only 11 pediatric ICU beds available. Pediatric non-ICU beds are also extremely strained, with only 37 beds available. Now, I got to remember, especially in their cases of the ICUs, that because of people not getting vaccinated and then getting incredibly sick, they're gobbling up most of these ICU beds. And so when a person, you know, you're one of the reasons that's also straining these ICU units is heart attacks, strokes, car accidents, other things like that, where people all of a sudden need to be in the ICU. And so we're down to very limited amount of facilities. And if things go like they did, remember last year, a lot of the worst days we had were in the realm of early December. That was because we had a lot of people with Thanksgiving, and then it kind of carried over. Total cases, by the way, in Minnesota, 875,917. Ahead of the big holiday weekend, COVID cases are surging in the region. In Minnesota alone, new cases are up 53% over the last 14 days. Minnesota hospitalizations due to COVID are up nearly 40% over the last 14 days. There are concerns the Thanksgiving holiday could lead to an even greater surge, and most hospitals are back to putting off the Thanksgiving holiday. Most hospitals are back to putting off elective surgeries, I should say. The increase in hospitalizations is coming not just from the rise in COVID patients, but also non-COVID emergencies, as well as preventable health checks many patients have been putting off. For healthcare workers, exhaustion and burnout set in long ago. I got more on that coming up here. Making the crisis worse, the number of healthcare workers leaving the jobs. Once again, I'll touch on that. Sahan Journal has an exceptional story on that as of right now. And, you know, you need to, you know, there's a, when you look at the way things are going, I think that there is a tendency to you think that this is as bad as it was before. It's not necessarily. I'm going to go with Rylan Eichen's story from the Minnesota Reformer. If you've not read it, it's quite good. It's basically saying, why does Minnesota have so many COVID-19 cases? And first of all, Minnesota is experiencing one of the nation's worst COVID-19 outbreaks, despite a relatively high vaccination rate of 68%. The apparent contradiction is left many Minnesotans wondering why cases are rising so fast. It is pretty bad. As of Friday, Minnesota had the county's fourth highest case rate of the country's, rather, not the county, the country's, at 74 cases per 100,000, surpassed only by Michigan, New Mexico, and New Hampshire. At one point, the week of the 15th, we were the worst in the nation. Our case counts, hospitalizations, and deaths haven't been this high since the last time last year before the rollout of vaccine. Right now, we're seeing roughly 22 deaths per day based on the seven-day averages and about 4,000 new cases on a daily basis. It should be mentioned we are still, though, even though this is right now, we are in the second worst surge of the entire pandemic. We are still well behind as bad as it got last year before the vaccine. And the main reason why is people have been vaccinated. And it should be mentioned that, if I can be honest with you, this is why it was a little frustrating at Mariucci on Saturday night, is that we know better. Now, I took some photos while I was there, and I took my mask off for the photos. But I want to make sure, we were basically sitting by ourselves. I think there was some people like four rows behind us, some people like three rows in front of us. So me taking off my mask did not really jeopardize myself per much. But I put it on immediately after we took the photos. You know, it's not a real surprise to see why COVID is skyrocketing when you don't see anyone wearing a freaking mask at a large event like this. I saw the photos from the game at the Vikings game yesterday. Hardly anyone in the stands wearing a freaking mask. Are you wondering why that these case rates are soaring? Of course not. Hospitals are overwhelmed again. Vaccinated people more likely to get sick and become hospitalized. COVID-19. I mean, that's the chart that accompanies this story on this is just extraordinary when you realize how the unvaccinated are basically not only jeopardizing their own health and well-being, but also the well-being of the medical industry by basically taking up every hospital bed in the state. Unvaccinated people are still far more likely to get sick and become hospitalized with COVID-19. As of early October, the most recent complete data available from the state, 72,628 fully vaccinated Minnesotans had tested positive, or about 2.2% of vaccinated people. Of that group, 3,177 had been hospitalized, fewer than 0.01% of vaccinated people. So once again, we can talk about the numbers. By far, if you're vaccinated, you are much less likely to get sick. Minnesota's current surge is as severe as the outbreaks in many southern states this summer, however. I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. I'll come on back to that because it is pretty remarkable how bad things were in the South earlier this year. As much as people, the Republicans like to say, it's so bad here. No, it's bad because you've created this problem, Republican Party of Minnesota. You have. And I'll get back to that as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. You know, I've speculated whether or not the Republican Party in Minnesota might not have officially kind of encouraged this reckless behavior with COVID. Well, I mean, that's not the mystery. I mean, how many times have you seen Republicans downplay the importance of vaccines or talk about masks and how bad they are? And of course, when you confront them on that, they'll the first thing, well, I'm not saying people shouldn't wear a mask. I'm just saying that they shouldn't have to if they don't want to, which is kind of saying they shouldn't have to wear a mask. But, you know, that's kind of who these people are. And we have speculated that the only thing I can think of is they're trying to kill their own constituents in an effort to make Biden and Democrats look bad, which is lunacy. But I'll be damned if I can think out another reason why the Republicans are so resistant to the idea of not getting sick, not dying, and not having their constituents go bankrupt with health care bills, because those things are going on. And what validates this is in the last week, I've started to see a lot of right-wing jackasses post out there. It's like, see, it's twice as bad as it was last year. You see these Democratic things, masks don't work, vaccines don't work. No. The vaccines do work. The masks do work. The vast majority of cases are unvaccinated people, and they're the ones having the most problem. But you see, is your determination to make this latest surge as bad as possible is serving up as many of those people as possible to death. And just so you can try to make a political point, let me go back here. We were talking before we went to the break about how some people in the state are saying, see, we're worse than Florida was. No, it's not even close. Not even close. The Minnesota right now on November 16th, the was 79.5. This is once again the story out of the Minnesota Reformer. The Minnesota on the 16th was at 79.5 per cases per 100,000 people. Mississippi was at 122.4. Louisiana was at 125.6. Florida at their worst, I think, was at 101.1. So they're all far worse than us. Now, I got to tell you the truth. I'm hoping that this peak starts turning back the other way soon, or else it might get worse. But the reality is, it's a matter of fact, right now, we're not even close to as bad as we were, Minnesota was, back in 2020, where we were at 125 cases back last year. This almost seems, like I said, the Republican Party seems to almost be determined to try to have as bad of a surge as possible. Where have the Republicans been? Take a look. We've talked about the counties where the worst outbreaks are at. And I don't hear any damn Republican at all saying, for God's sakes, get vaccinated, wear a mask. I don't hear anyone doing anything. I'm sorry. I mean, from the behavior of the Republican Party themselves to the narrative that they're trying to push right now, how am I supposed to think anything but the fact that they're trying to serve up their own constituents just to have a talking point against Joe Biden and the Democrats? It's lunacy. Tell me how I'm wrong on this. And, you know, and until I start seeing Republicans going out into their districts and saying, hey, I understand, you know, there people have had some questions, but I think the numbers show us now vaccines actually make it a lot safer for you. You're at least not less likely to get really sick. You're less likely to get hospitalized and you're far less likely to die with a vaccine. So let's get you vaccinated. Nope, nothing. They just want the talking point as their constituents die and get bankrupt for their narrative. It's just lunacy. It's just freaking lunacy at this point. But I don't know what else it could be. I don't know. There used to be a time where as a country we'd band together and say, oh, I don't know, polio was bad. I know. I know. What an outrageous statement. Yeah, we all banded together and said polio was bad. You didn't have Republicans sitting there screaming, my child would rather be on the iron lung than take your vaccine. No one said that. We all saw the value in trying to stave off a major health crisis. Today, it's you know, people have convinced themselves that me saying, I don't want you sick, I don't want you dead, and I don't want you bankrupt, as some sort of twisted political argument, which they have to go against, because then if they don't get sick and they don't die and they don't get bankrupt, then the libs win. I don't know what's wrong with you people. And I sure as hell don't know why the Republicans aren't far more frustrated, considering the counties that this is decimating right now. I think about the damage you are doing to the ag sector in this state. When you look at the case counts in like Dodge County and holy God, Todd County, you're going to dramatically change a lot of things in this state just so you can say, see, the unvaccinated people got sick, so Governor Walz didn't help them. Governor Walz has been begging you guys to get vaccinated. I just don't know what else it takes for you guys. Number of factors to blame, said Dr. Rebecca Wirtz, University of Minnesota Public Health Researcher. One-third of Minnesota's population, or about 1.8 million people, is still unvaccinated. What's wrong with you people? We know that Delta will find you if you're not vaccinated. We are going to have, you know, you're going to have in rural Minnesota, we are going to have COVID wings of hospitals and medical facilities for the next decade, because these people are refusing to get vaccinated. I mean, think about that. For a decade, you're going to end up having insanely more expensive. And trust me when I say this, it's a matter of time before the insurance industry comes on out and basically says, you know, if you get COVID, you had your chance to get vaccinated, we're going to charge you an arm and a freaking leg for your COVID if you get COVID. And trust me, they will. And then you think about how many Republicans refuse to get the Affordable Care Act. Jeez. You know, if you got vaccinated in early 2020, your immunity is starting to wane a little bit. The safest bet is get your booster shot, wear a mask, and limit contact if you can. And that's the best way to get through this. I get damn tired of people who seem to, you know, I mean, think about this. Last year, we went through hell in this state. And the Republican Party's mentality seems to we can outdo what we did last year. And you're like, what are you doing? I mean, if I was a representative or a senator in this state, and I had my district, and I was looking down at these numbers, and I'd look at these counties, and it's like, holy God, all my counties are in the worst in the country. I myself would be on the street in every city with a bullhorn saying, for goodness sakes, get vaccinated. I'd be doing interviews with every newspaper and every radio station. Get vaccinated. Instead, these people are like, well, they choose not to. I guess that's their prerogative. As all of a sudden, and my God, can I tell you how many times I've had to hear the story of a non-COVID-related medical emergency and the person can't get into a hospital? Because a bunch of freaking knuckleheads who think that they can take it, ivermectin and jam it up their backside have all of a sudden been proven that, oh, well, I guess COVID doesn't work that way. Eesh. Just disturbing. I would highly recommend reading the Minnesota Reformer article. It's quite good. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has activated the National Guard for response teams to provide support to long-term care facilities that are experiencing staffing shortages. The governor is also proposing providing $50 million in federal funding to long-term care facilities to help with hiring and staff retention, the news release says. Our long-term care facilities are facing an all-hands-on-deck moment, and that's why we are taking unprecedented action to support skilled nursing workers, residents, and patients, Governor Walz said in Monday news release. Financial support will help our skilled nursing facilities hire and retain talented staff to care for patients, and for the Minnesota National Guard is preparing to fill in any staffing gaps. I'm deeply thankful for the skilled nursing personnel who work so hard to care for so many Minnesotans every day. I pledge to do whatever it takes to help Minnesota's long-term community get through this challenging time. To start, 400 Minnesota National Guard members will train as certified nursing assistants and temporary nursing aides over the next 7 days. They'll then serve as skilled nursing response teams to support long-term care facilities that are short-staffed. Meanwhile, National Guard members continue to be deployed to the state's alternative care sites in Brainerd, St. Paul, and Shakopee. I mean, now wait a minute. Wait. If you're up in Brainerd, that's Todd County, isn't it? That's you. Most of you have turned away from science. Why all of a sudden do you need help now? You see, that's part of my problem. Is that okay? Fine. You don't like science. You don't like health science. Fine. But then when you get sick, why all of a sudden are you a born again science believer? All of a sudden you get sick and the hospital's got to take care of me now. Well, why didn't you get vaccinated? I don't know. I'm a stupid idiot. Yeah, that's about it. No, at least stick to your guns. If you truly do not believe the vaccine can help you when you get sick, then don't go to the hospital. Don't. You know, you've made your choice. You don't believe in the science. You don't believe in the healthcare science. You've chosen that side. Don't all of a sudden become a hypocrite and say, well, now I think they need it works because I'm sick. No, you grab your ivermectin, jam it up your backside and ride out the storm. Party at your house. Whee! Ugh. Last week, Waltz announced emergency federal medical teams. Like I said, I mean, you want more proof that I think that the Republican Party is just trying to make this as bad as possible? They want to fire Jan Malcolm. And today, Jeremy Miller, the Senate Majority Leader, put out this snarky list about, we need to have this special session to help out the farmers. You guys just make sure you don't fire Jan Malcolm, the director of the Minnesota Health Department of Health, during the pandemic. But part of me thinks they want to fire her because they want the response to get even worse. If they fire her and gut all the staff and then take care of their funding and then, now I think we can move forward. Oh, it's horrible in the state. Tim Walz is to fault. That, you see, this is the problem. These guys don't take this seriously. And if their main goal is to fire the department of commissioner of the Department of Health, execute them, as Kurt Dout said, well, then how serious are you taking this problem? You're not. They absolutely are not. The Legislative COVID-19 Response Commission is reviewing the governor's request, and if it gets approved, the Minnesota Department of Human Services will distribute the grants in December. Oh, I imagine the health department then we don't like Jan Malcolm at all, but could you send some of that money up into our district? Because it's really bad here. See, that's the part. I mean, you want to know why Jan Malcolm does a job that I could never do. Most of these commissioners do a job that I could never do. Is because I'm sorry, I couldn't. When Jeremy Miller comes up there and says, "Well, we are going to fire her, and I want to fire her, and fire, I want to fire her," and then all of a sudden he comes hat in hand to the Department of Health, saying, "Jan, I know that I say that I want you fired and don't want you here at all and everything, and I'm trying to jeopardize what all you're doing and all that, but you know you've got funds and personnel we need down in my county. Can you help us out?" I'd be looking at us like, you're on your own, pal. I'll wave at you after you fire me, okay? You see, Jan has to be far better person than I would be in this circumstance. Far better than any of these Republican politicians. Because it takes a real arrogant jackass to sit there and say, I'm going to fire you, and then go back hat in hand to that person saying, well, but you have to treat me fairly even though I want to fire you. It takes a real jackass to be like that. And welcome to the Minnesota Republican Party. The latest COVID-19 surge is a challenge for everyone, and the most especially difficult for long-term care providers who have been on the front lines of this pandemic for nearly 2 years, said Jan Malcolm in a statement. These actions provide vital support for the workforce in the time of need. We ask all Minnesotans to recognize that they have a role to play here as well. They can help reduce the pressure of healthcare and long-term care workers by doing their part to reduce the spread of COVID through vaccines, masking, and prevention measures. I can't wait. I can't wait for the next time a Republican wins the governor's race and how every Republican is going to be, if the Democrats control the Senate, going to be, you need to approve the commissioners immediately. You can't hold them. You can't do that. Can't wait for that because you know that's going to come. You know, that's what we do when we'll hold Democratic commissioners hostage, but you can't do that. That's not fair. Bunch of whiny little. Ugh. Ugh. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Oh, I've got a gem of a little story here to continue out with the Minnesota coronavirus update from one of our favorite Republicans, Mary Franson. Oh, it's a delight. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Like I said, I've got a lot of questions about what the Republican Party of Minnesota's real motivation is. They're not trying to help their constituents who are dying at a far worse rate than Democrats are, the vaccinated Democrats are. They're getting sick at a much worse rate. They're going bankrupt at a much worse rate with health care charges. You don't see them. They seem to be most interested in firing Jay and Malcolm than actually trying to solve this problem. I honestly do feel as if the Republican Party is trying to make this as worse as possible just so they have something they can try to campaign against. But the reality is that they just, you can see through this. But it doesn't mean that they themselves don't think that they're doing something righteous or noble, because I have looked, sometimes Republicans, they just present you with a reality, a story that gives the reality of the world that they live in, and they don't realize that how goofy they really are. I'll give you a great example of that. A number of Minnesotans have been showing a support for a restaurant in St. Paul after a state lawmaker tweeted it had lost her business due to its vaccine requirement. Representative Mary Franson of Alexandria, Republican, tweeted on November 19th that she ordered pho for takeout from, I think it's Ngon, N-G-O-N, Ngon Vietnamese Bistro. I think that's right. If you can correct me, please do. N-G-O-N, I think it's Ngon. What she called one of my favorite places and learned indoor dining is regulated to just the mRNA people. Today is the last day ordering from Ngon Bistro. She added, vaccinated or not, no one should be participating in medical status segregation. What's your stance on abortion? Oh, I'm sorry. What was that again? I did. Yeah. Okay. Anywho. Needless to say, okay, I'm going to stop. Mary, you're out in rural Minnesota. Are a lot of your constituents, the people that have elected you, which, you know, it's not overwhelming, but it's, you know, still win your district. Do you think a lot of them are traveling into the metro area core to get food anyway? Because I don't think your impact of this boycott you think is going to shutter the business is, and by the way, so much for, you know, private businesses being able to do what they want to do. Uh-huh. Yeah. Republican standards being exposed. But you do realize that most of your constituents are terrified of coming into Minnetonka, let alone into downtown Minneapolis. Holy God. These people the minute they get into a place where there's more traffic lights and exit ramps and they see, like, hotels on the side of the highway and stuff, they freak out. Like I said, I mean, I lived in Iowa for years. People would say, I went to the cities this weekend. So where'd you go? I went to Burnsville. You went to Burnsville. You didn't go to the cities. You went to Burnsville. That's not the cities. You're in Burnsville. So I don't think, I'm pretty sure most of your constituents, yeah, I don't think they're going out to these restaurants as much as you think they are. Quickly, people replied to her tweet and retweeted her showing the support for Ngon Bistro, with scores of people saying they will make sure to go to the restaurant because it requires vaccinations. The Ngon Bistro's website clearly states indoor dining is available with proof of vaccination using a mobile app or a vaccination card, and that patio seating is available without restrictions. It also offers carryout. So, you know, even as she complains about this private business making a private business decision, they still have an option for her to eat there without vaccination. And yet it's not good enough for Mary. There's something about Mary. There's something about her. Yeah, she's nuts. It's worth noting the restaurant is not just allowing the mRNA people to eat indoors. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is not an mRNA vaccine, but is good to dine at non-bistro as well. Franson has spoken out against COVID-related mandates for much of the pandemic. She attended the Medical Freedom Rally against vaccine mandates at the Capitol in August, has spoken out against COVID-19 restrictions, including the Minnesota House mask requirement. Her Twitter page also includes her sharing multiple posts that doubt the efficiency of vaccines, which have been proven to be safe and healthy, effective at reducing COVID deaths and hospitalizations. Like I said, you have these Republicans out there that almost seem to be trying to march their own constituents to the morgue. Douglas County, where about half her district is located, is the 32nd highest COVID rate in the country last week in Douglas. By the way, and I want to give Bring Me the News some just, this is magnificent trolling. The end of this story from Bring Me the News is the address for the restaurant. Oh, by the way, you can find Non-Vietnamese Bistro at 799 University Avenue West in St. Paul. Stop on by. Bravo, Bring Me the News. That is some top-notch trolling. You tell me what these Republicans are up to. Seriously, you tell me what these Republicans are up to. I look at this and I see a determination to basically sicken their own people as much as possible. And no matter what science or anything you put in their face, they will always, now. Because I think down deep inside, the whole point for them has nothing to do with medicine or science. It has to do with politics. And they think that they can win by basically killing as many of their constituents as possible. That's, what else am I supposed to think? Hour two of the show up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Terry John Zeal is going to join us here at the bottom of the hour. It's our Thanksgiving show. We talk with him about food. He's our food guy. Lots of stuff to get to with him coming up a little bit later on. 952-946-6205 is the way you can get in touch with the show if you'd like. Robert Bly, the National Book Award-winning poet who started out writing bucolic poems about rural Minnesota and went on to shake up the complacent world of 1950s poetry, rail against war, bring international poets to Western readers, and became a best-selling author teaching men how to be in touch with their feelings, passed away on Sunday, just a month before his 95th birthday. He died at home with most of his family in attendance. He had no pain, said his daughter, Mary Bly. We played Chopin all the day before, and literally all of his children were around him. When we took his final breath, it was with a choral hallelujah. In his heyday, Bly was known for making theater of poetry readings, reading poems twice or three times just because he loved their sound, reading other writers' work, wearing a rubber fright mask or an embroidered vest on stage, reading to the background music of drums and sitars. But despite his theatrics, he was intensely serious about poetry and its importance to the cultural and political landscape. Bly lived most of his life in native Minnesota, a familiar figure at local literary events until recent years when his memory began to fade. His last public reading was April 13, 2015 at Plymouth Congregational Church in Minneapolis, where he launched the collection, Like the New Moon, I Will Live My Life. One by one, 24 poets read their favorite Bly poems before Bly himself stood and read Moon Behind a Cottonwood Tree Arriving in the North Woods, and the poem that had become his late-in-life theme, Keeping Our Small Boat Afloat, about survival, grace, and death. He thumped his cane on the wooden floor to the church in time with the words. Let me read this for you. Snowfall in late November afternoon. The grass is half covered with snow. It was the sort of snowfall that starts in late afternoon, and now the little houses of the grass are growing dark. If I could reach down near the earth, I could take handfuls of darkness, a darkness that was always there, which we never noticed. As the snow grows heavier, the corn stalks fade farther away, and the barn moves nearer to the house. The barn moves all alone in the growing storm. The barn is full of corn and moving towards us now like a hulk blown towards us in a storm at sea. All the sailors on deck have been blind for many years. Very nice poem. Very nice poet. Will be missed. Will be very much missed. As obviously have major impact on a lot of things, on a lot of people, and a lot of writers as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Last night, I mean, like many other people, just barreled over by what happened in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Officials in Waukesha said the suspect in Sunday's incident at the Christmas parade is Daryl E. Brooks. Waukesha Police Chief Daniel Thompson said officials believe the 39-year-old acted alone. Thompson added that Brooks was involved in a domestic disturbance prior to his driving the SUV through the parade on Sunday. He said the suspect was involved in a domestic disturbance prior to driving in the crowd. We have information that the suspect prior to the incident was involved in a domestic disturbance, which was just minutes prior, and the suspect left the scene just prior to our arrival at that domestic disturbance, the chief said. When the suspect was driving through and into the crowd, one officer did discharge his firearm and fire shots at the suspect to stop the threat, but due to the amount of people had to stop the fire, not fire at any additional shots. Thompson added the officer has been put on administrative leave. He noted there is no evidence this was a terrorist incident. Waukesha, Wisconsin police chief then added, officials are referring five charges of intentional homicide for Daryl Brooks for the incident at the Christmas parade, adding that more charges are possible. At this time, the Waukesha Police Department is referring five counts of first-degree intentional homicide with additional charges based on the investigation, Thompson said, speaking in a news conference this afternoon. At least five people were killed and at least 48 were injured when the SUV plowed into the Christmas parade on Sunday. The ages of the deceased victims range from 52 to 81, said Police Chief Daniel Thompson. The victims include four women, one man. According to Thompson, the police chief said he arrived on the scene minutes after the incident occurred. He described seeing heroism amid the chaos and tragedy, first responders and residents working together to triage the victims and get them as stable as possible, Thompson said Monday during the afternoon news conference. Officers and residents took victims to the hospital in their personal vehicles. Fire Chief Steve Howard said the fire department personnel transported 22 patients to six area hospitals. Tragedy. And it was interesting. Clint Watts, the CIA analyst, he made the point last night. He goes, I don't think this is terrorism. He says it could be, but he said that terrorists, when they drive into a crowd like this, generally don't swerve. And this individual at times was trying to hit people, at other times was trying to get around other people. And he said that didn't seem like a terrorist strike, and it wasn't. It obviously a horrible story. just a horrible story. Manchester police. As I say this, I want to make sure I bring up another story that did happen too, which is, kind of getting lost a little bit. Manchester, Connecticut police are investigating reports several protesters were struck by a small SUV during a demonstration over the not guilty verdicts of Kyle Rittenhouse trial in Wisconsin. About 15 to 20 people with groups including Power Up Connecticut, the Self-Defense Brigade, and Black Lives Matter were blocking a section of Main Street on Saturday afternoon when the SUV drove up to them and slowed down. The driver kept going at a slow rate of speed, struck about a half a dozen people, and then drove away from the scene. Karen Prescott, founder and chief executive of Power Up Connecticut, said several protesters are recovering from injuries that are not life-threatening. She said the SUV was a black Honda CR-V with Massachusetts plates. Police Lieutenant Ryan Shea told the Journal that the incident is under investigation but did not provide further details. Some of the protesters were armed and apparently showed restraint by not using their weapons. Rittenhouse was acquitted of all charges on Friday after testifying. He acted in self-defense in the killing of two people and the wounding of a third during the August 2020 protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, days after a white police officer shot a black man. Shot a black man in the back multiple times. In the back multiple times. When the Waukesha story happened, I think I posted out here, we don't know what had happened. But I hope this isn't some fool who basically took Judge Schroeder's ruling, the way he set that trial up, it was basically his kangaroo court to make sure Rittenhouse never was not found guilty, and took that as a way of saying, hey, you know, as long as, and the argument that that Schroeder made was that you cannot call these people victims and you cannot hold Rittenhouse accountable if basically in a crowd of people, there's one person who's committed a crime. And if one person committed a crime, well, they're fair game. And you can argue, well, that one person did something. I didn't know what the rest of them were doing. And under Judge Schroeder's rules, that's a fair argument. And that you can't call the victims victims. But you can call them anything you want to, as long as one person, if they were, one rioter in the group, well, then the entire group is a bunch of rioters and they get what they deserve. I was expecting a story to come down this weekend in regards to this. And the reality is that it did in Connecticut. The Waukesha story sounds more like a deranged individual who is trying to flee a crime scene, who seems to have a rap sheet. It makes me kind of wonder how in the world he was on the street as it is. Let's just be honest about it. And quite a few problems with the law. But I'm preparing for the worst. And that's kind of where we're at now as a country. I'm preparing for this to get worse. There was a story out this weekend that said after the Rittenhouse trial, the pro-Rittenhouse social media posts overwhelmingly came from Russia and China. That this is, the Russian and the Chinese seem very intent on trying to start a race war in this country. And that's just horrible. And shame on the social media companies for allowing them to do such a thing. But at the same time, it's a fair argument to say that Republican Party of Minnesota and Republican Party nationally seem somewhat okay with this new stresses on race relations in this country. That white people have gone far enough. It's time for the rest of you guys. We allowed there to be a black president. So the rest of you need to understand in line. That's kind of the mentality you get from the Republicans. How dare you teach anyone that slavery was bad? How dare you teach anyone that the Native Americans were screwed? How dare you teach these people this? They basically said, we tolerate black athletes and black musicians and stuff like this. But now we're saying it's gone far enough. We're retrying to install the white superiority, priority, whatever they want to call it, in place. It's being fueled by the Russians and the Chinese. They're trying to break this country, and they have found a way to do it through social media and through good old-fashioned racism. By firing up the white America and saying, oh, white America, you need to be scared. Oh, you need to put the minority groups back in place. And like I said, you're getting a lot of people that seem to be perfectly okay with that in this country. I'm scared about where we're going. My first thought when the Waukesha thing was this a Rittenhouse wannabe? Someone who wanted to take out liberals. Then you find out there was indeed a case where it sounds like individual purposely ran into some protesters out in Connecticut. You had multiple groups call for the Rittenhouse verdict was the beginning of the movement to basically start opening fire on Democrats. And frankly, I got to tell you the truth. I actually have to wonder where some of these Republicans are going. Is this really where they're at? Are they at the point where, you know what? Fine. We have to start shooting people on the left. Shoot them. You have to do either what I say, You pass only the bills I am okay with, or else we're going to open fire on you. Because I'm got to tell you the truth. I look at some of these loon balls on the right, and as much as they want to talk about Antifa, I don't see Antifa out there putting Democrats on targets and aiming guns out there and saying, send me to Washington, D.C., and you watch me do this. That's kind of what you're seeing. And the reality is that this country is going to get broken by racism if we don't stop. If we don't stop, this country is going to get broken by racism. We already had as much as we can argue that it didn't really solve too much, we already had a major conflict in this country, and the Civil War, over slavery. But back then, what happened? Well, white America came back and said, whoa, okay, they're not slaves anymore, but let's not give them too much hope. Let's not give them equal standing. Let's not give them equal footing. Let's not do that. And how similar is that to what we're hearing right now? This pushback is, how dare you teach people races that slavery was bad, critical race theory, which is only being taught in certain colleges in this country, but paranoid, scared, pathetic white people in the suburbs are terrified, and in rural Minnesota, are terrified. Little Billy's being indoctrinated in kindergarten. It doesn't make you a bad person to acknowledge what freaking happened. I am of Scottish ancestry. A lot of European ancestry in there. I'm a big white guy. I'm a big white guy. I can honestly look at you and say, wow, the Native Americans got screwed over. Holy God, did they get screwed over in this country. African Americans yanked from their ancestors, yanked from their countries, brought to this country to serve as forced labor for white America, wealthy white America in the South. We have undeniable racism of pretty much all non-white groups in this country, of religions, non-Christian religions, of all people who dare to identify as anything but, you know, either male or female. We're at the same point we were at the end of the Civil War, where basically white America said enough. And this is what's going to break us as a country. If we don't stop this, if we don't stop the racism, it's only a matter of time. And we're not talking years. We're talking months, weeks, days. You have a media cycle in this country that basically looks at the worst of us, the racism, and puts it on the front page as some sort of counterpoint to reality. Gives it viability, gives it legitimacy by the constant coverage they give the howler monkeys and the screaming fools. Because journalism that's today. It's not going out and reporting the facts, or as most journalists in the past would have said, is, well, you're a Nazi, so you're horrible. Not today. Well, it's not our place to say if the Nazis are bad. Yeah, no, you can say the Nazis are bad. You can do that. You can say the Klan is bad. KKK, bad. You can do that. Racism is bad. Choosing to jam ivermectin up your backside as opposed to get vaccinated, that's kind of stupid. Pretty stupid. Really stupid. Really stupid. But here we are. I love this country. I do. I love my state. I love Minnesota. I love the United States of America. It pains me to see how far we have fallen. But we've fallen this far because we have too many people in this country where the only thing that matters to them is the politics. Not the betterment of our fellow human beings. Not of anything like that. Nope. They will screw you over 1,000 ways from Sunday if they can. They have no interest in making your life better. They have no interest in making your world better. And unfortunately, they represent half this country. So the question is, how are we going to fight this? I don't know. Like I said, the Russians and the Chinese are giddy about it because they can fire up racism left and right through social media in this country. And the social media companies have no culpability or desire to stop it, for God's sakes. It is, as we get ready for Thanksgiving, just realize that unless something dramatic changes, it's going to be a dark, dark time in America. And we need some leadership that doesn't exist with half the politicians of this country. And it doesn't seem like it's something that they're going to embrace anytime soon, judging by their reaction to Rittenhouse. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I was going to talk about a Thanksgiving story here, about kind of clearing up some of the mistakes about Thanksgiving. Instead, I'll save that for tomorrow, because I did want to make sure I mentioned the Sahan Journal story, which is just exceptional. Faustina Minta loves her job as a nursing assistant, but she's afraid to pick up one of the extra shifts she's constantly being offered. If she does, she may be the only assistant helping roughly eight nurses care for as many as 33 patients at St. John's Hospital in Maplewood. Sometimes, she said, this has happened in the last 5 months and the hospital has been short-staffed. Minta, who works as a float aide, meaning she rotates in different areas of the hospital, said that ideally two more nursing assistants would be on the shift with her. Minta performs tasks such as checking patients' vitals, assisting them with the bathroom, checking their blood sugar levels. With lack of other nursing assistants to help, she must scramble between patients. Sometimes this means leaving a patient in the bathroom, instructing them to hit the assist button when they're done. This is particularly problematic for patients with conditions like dementia, which may prevent them from knowing how to properly call for help. It's unsafe for me and it's unsafe for patient because I am rushing, says Minta. And it's getting worse despite efforts for her workplace to lure workers with bonus pay. What I'm experiencing is they hire new nursing assistants, they come and see the workload is too much, and they do not come to work again. Wow. In the healthcare and social assistance industry, employment is currently down more than 18,000 people compared to March of 2020. And just when the pandemic hit, overall healthcare vacancies are even higher, currently sitting at near 40,000 unfilled jobs. The biggest job losses in the healthcare came during April, May, and June of 2020, according to the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. At that point, the industry saw as many 40,000 previously employed people no longer working. Temporary furloughs made up many of these initial job losses as the state suspended elective procedures during COVID-19 economic shutdowns. As shutdowns lifted, more than half of this lost healthcare workforce recovered by August 2020. But since then, the number of people working in healthcare has stagnated. And at the same time, the number of job vacancies in the healthcare field skyrocketed as employers also created new jobs to fill growing care needs during the pandemic. At Hennepin Healthcare, that includes recruiting people with no healthcare experience and placing them in a 6-week training program with the Red Cross to get certified as a healthcare assistant. Tony Campisi, a talent acquisition director at Hennepin Healthcare, characterized the Red Cross training program as a bright spot in recruiting new employees. But the overall situation has been tough. Healthcare systems across Minnesota currently have a total of 700 medical assistant openings. Across all professions, Hennepin Healthcare has 625 job openings. Wow. Normally, job openings range from 350 to 400. Another point of concern, Campisi said he gets about 5 applications for every registered nurse opening. Before the pandemic, he'd get 4 times as many applications. It feels worse now than it did during the height of the pandemic, Campisi said. I've been in this space for 25 years. I've weathered Y2K, the last recession in this period of time we're going through right now. I'm worried. That's right. We're breaking the healthcare industry. We're breaking them because it's because everything is filled to the max. Every hospital bed is filled. Every ICU bed is filled with COVID people. And so, you know, it's not easy to get people to want to go work in that field anyway, considering the health risks they themselves have to jeopardize themselves with, the safety protocols they have to put themselves with, and the fact that they're doing an incredibly stressful job. But at the same time, then all of a sudden, cut the staff members, make them work, what was it, 33 patients? Might be 33 patients? My goodness. On one side, I will say this, when this whole thing clears on up, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for people to get into the healthcare industry. And I think that, that might be a boon, but I got to tell you the truth. I don't blame people from walking away from this industry at this point. And I can understand why people are like, whoa, 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 I didn't sign up to basically have to work 16-hour shifts and run patient to patient to patient and hope that I can basically get everything done. I can understand it. Nurses and doctors, you guys are, you're absolutely amazing people. And this has been ungodly for you. I praise you all every single day. I'm very thankful for you guys because your patience and your expertise have been unsurpassed. And like I said, you're getting a lot more grief than you deserve in this day and age. All my best to you guys. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We change directions dramatically when we do return. Terry John Zila joins us. We'll talk Thanksgiving with him, the food guy. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Thanksgiving coming up here on Thursday, and of course, it's a tradition for us to bring on our food specialist, Terry John Zila, kind enough to join us to talk about Thanksgiving and all that good stuff with him. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Well, hello. How the heck are you?
I'm doing fine. I thought you were going to be in the office today. Where are you driving around at?
Well, actually, I am. I picked up my dogs at the groomer. So if you hear the panting in the background, it's not that I'm not excited to be on the show, but it's two St. Bernards who are tuckered out from a long day of beauty.
My goodness, your dogs are massive. What got you into St. Bernards again?
Well, it just was kind of by accident. It was originally going to be a playmate for my Newfoundland, who I sadly had to put down. And I just heard about the St. Bernard place, and I got one. And the second one was an adoption, so I'm like, I guess I have two St. Bernards.
You've got wonderful dogs, and I do that. I would say the panting would be the food that you make, because you still are probably the best chef I've seen. And your food is truly amazing. I've had the pleasure of taking cooking classes with Terry. I highly encourage you. So let's make sure we run through all your things here. Let's start with your wedding cake business. My gosh, your cakes are gorgeous, my friend.
Well, it's John Jenwan. We do wedding cakes and other pastries as well. And then the Terry John Zila Catering is, obviously that's become more of a staple of my business, but we are opening a coffee shop in St. Paul called Hepcat Coffee in the old Ecolab headquarters at the Osborne 370. And our soft open is Winter Carnival, and our grand opening is February 7th.
Okay, and what's the name of the place going to be once again?
Hepcat.
Okay.
H-E-P-C-A-T, so that kind of 1920s. Feel that kind of that lower town feel. So I'm excited.
Nice. What prompted this? This is new. I'm very excited about this.
They approached me. Oh. They wanted basically. There was a coffee shop in the lobby that was more for charity. It didn't do so well, but they wanted someone to bring in as an anchor to attract tenants in the area. And we're a block away from the St. Paul Hotel. It's probably the best area of St. Paul, right by Rice Park.
Yeah.
I couldn't be happier.
Oh, no, you got a it's a fantastic location. You definitely are going to get some benefit from that. So once again, that's going to be, we'll let everyone know. You just keep us up to date on the soft opening and the regular opening. We'll let everyone know when those are going to happen. They can head over and say hi to you over there, okay?
Fantastic.
Beautiful. Are you doing your usual, I mean, in the past, I don't know how much you've taken this off, you have been hired as a charitable cook to help out sometimes on Thanksgiving. Are you doing anything like that this year, or are you going to have a Thanksgiving
to
yourself?
I'm not. This year, honestly, I kind of wanted to have the holiday back because the year before last, we did 23 charity dinners, and I love doing charity work, and we raised a lot of money, but it got to the point where I thought to myself, I need to not give away so many nights, but also I wanted to have my own holiday back, and Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
Well, it is, because for you, it's there are so many different ways you can go with that, and you and I have talked for many years about Thanksgiving. It really is. I mean, granted, you've got to kind of the ideas of what you want to do with the turkey and the potatoes and the stuffing, but it is an open palette on how you want to create the meal for yourself.
Well, next, I'm not even doing turkey this year. I am doing a brined stuff this year, and we're doing a whole roasted filet mignon.
Wow. Okay. Where did the filet mignon idea come from?
Well, I like meat.
Well, of course, yeah.
And why not?
Yeah, all right. You know. That's, I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, your argument pretty much passes muster. It is kind of the idea, though, of, as you said, about the preconceived notions. Yes, turkey is wonderful, and it's a great thing. But the reality is, turkey is just an option on the table. You really can do whatever you want, because I mean, the idea is the meal.
Right. And again, I think sometimes, like, I make a nice turkey, but the issue is that I think sometimes that people wind up getting kind of trapped in that that's what they have to make, rather than, and some people don't even like turkey. So I think sometimes it's better to just do what you want.
Well, I will say this. You have given out the brine, and I'll make sure I post the brine. I have the brine recipe. You gave me a brine years ago that I tried. The reason why I do a turkey is because of your brine. Your brine is sensational. It's the apple cider brine where you put the oranges in it, carrots in it, gingers in it. It is amazing because I have yet to cut into the turkey, and it's not like a prop turkey where the juice just – it's so juicy. It's unbelievable.
No, it's so funny. My late mother, God bless her soul, she was saying, I did the brine turkey the first year, and I cut it open, and she goes, turkeys don't have juice. And my dad turned to her and goes, no, honey, your turkeys don't have juice.
Yeah, I've been to her house. I've had the dry turkey. It's not nearly as pleasant, but that's why they have gravy. Tried to rehydrate after the fact. By the way, I do love the fact I can hear your two St. Bernards in the back of the car. That is brilliant.
Well, we are home now, so I don't have to. The panting will alleviate.
of course, with the turkey this year, we've talked in the past many times about stuffing. Talk about with the chicken breast. I mean, how do you jazz that up if you want to do something like on a smaller level? I mean, there have been some stories of turkeys are going to be harder to find this year, so maybe a chicken breast is a good option.
I've heard that story. Apparently Costco didn't hear that story because they have tons of turkeys. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things where I don't know if the media latched onto it and it became fact, but I'm seeing turkeys everywhere.
I think it in this day and age, it's a little bit of that, right-wing propaganda trying to make Biden look bad. So, you're not going to find a turkey. I agree with you. I've been to a few stores. There have been more turkeys than you could shake a stick at. You're not going to have a trial. At least from what I've seen, I'm not saying it's everywhere, but at least here on the west side of the metro, I'm not seeing the problem.
Yeah, no, not at all. So I don't know why that came about. But, I think the problem is it's a non-issue.
When it comes to cooking like this, and if you do something that's non-traditional, if you do the chicken breast, you do the filet mignon, I think it's one thing I would make, and I'll get your opinion on this, it'd probably be a safe bet to do something that you know what to do, because obviously with kind of a showcase dinner, you don't want to, it can get a little tricky if you're doing something for the first time.
Well, the whole thing, again, I think what happened, I will say one thing though, I've made some of my best things when I hadn't made them before.
Okay.
Because one thing about that is that it makes you pay more attention. So sometimes when we're in our mode and we cook what we quote unquote always cook, you tend to your attention deficit sets in, and you're just doing what you do, and you don't really think about the process. But when you're making something new, you have to pay attention. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in just the rise of this, and I don't think it's too much of a surprise with the especially the rise of food delivery systems and stuff like this. You get a lot of people that get the delivered food now.
The thing is, I did that last year. It was great for COVID. But sometimes I and even being a caterer, I will say that I think there's something special about making it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that I think that's the point. I mean, if you're trying to, you have someone here, it's like, okay, you know what? I don't cook a lot. I'm real scared of of, you know, making simply boiling noodles, and the idea of doing a large meal really terrifies me. What do you say to someone? You say, you know what, I understand that's easy for you to kind of go do that phone call and have someone drop off a full meal, but the reality is that you can, you know, it's not nearly as tough and difficult as you think it is.
Well, and I mean, again, people go, well, what am I going to do with a whole turkey? Well, that's why Jesus invented turkey breast.
you don't have to
make that much food. And I think what happens is that people, I think when you don't cook a lot, I think people panic. But then if you don't cook a lot, just make something simple. Make three or four things. It doesn't have to be this Norman Rockwell spread.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, all right, so I am a person that loves turkey. I like a big turkey. I like a big turkey. And I always make a lot of leftovers. I do soup. I do other things. What's your favorite leftover turkey meal? What's your favorite?
I'm a big pot pie guy.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I do like pot pie. And I've done it either with I've done it with puff pastry. I've done it with a biscuit top as well. I've even done a phyllo top pot pie. Any kind of bread element. Because basically all it is turkey, vegetables, and gravy. And with some kind of pastry element. So I think that's the fun thing, is you can really go hog wild with it.
Do you, when you do your leftover pot pie with this, do you put a crust on the bottom,
encased
one?
Never. Because what happens is that I like to just bake it, and then I'll often, and if it's a puff pastry, I can put that on top. But what you can also do is cook your bread elements separately. So that means as you serve the leftovers, you can put your bread element on as you serve it, so it doesn't get soggy and ruined.
Nice. Oh, that's
Marie Callender does. Marie Callender does a very nice pot pie with a top and bottom crust. Let's let Marie have that. It's one of the few things she does well. So let's leave Marie alone.
Oh, the old Swanson pot pies that, you know, they came out in their little metal tin foil things. I remember those.
Yeah.
So you have your choice here. Don't be afraid. Don't, you know, you can think outside the box or go with the turkey breast. That's a great way to get your turkey, but not have the whole bird. I like the whole bird, so I'm going to have that. I'm do soup, and I love it because it's always, you know, I give a ton to the neighborhood because I always, you know, I always have that turkey that's way too big, man.
And you're getting a tom as well.
Yes.
So that's why I'm glad you brine it, because when you get a turkey over 14 pounds or so, generally you're getting a tom, which often can be tougher.
Yes. So you brine that sucker. What's the stuffing? Are you going to do a stuffing with your chicken breast and filet?
Oh, yeah. Classic. You know, and actually I have some friends that are gluten-free. And the nice thing about stuffing is if you use a good quality gluten-free bread, sauteed onions, sauteed celery, a nice amount of sage, you really can't tell on stuffing because there's just so much moisture. I toss in an egg in there. Mm-hmm. And then one thing about the stuffing, I tell people, go, oh, I don't want to stuff my bird because you'll get sick from it. Well, especially like with the big bird that you have, sometimes by the time you roast it, sometimes the stuffing can be not cooked. Well, here's the deal. One, never stuff anything before and then refrigerate and then cook it from frozen or from refrigerated, because then you'll get, it won't come to temperature.
Mm-hmm.
What I do is I microwave my stuffing so it's warm, stuff what I want, and then bake it.
Mm-hmm. I've taken your advice. I don't do that anymore. I actually bake my stuffing separate. And yeah, to a point, I do a little. You lose a little bit of the flavor of the turkey, but I also like, I'll use a nice turkey stock, and there, you can go find them at kind of specialty stores, a really good turkey stock, and that kind of helps out a lot, especially if you're making that stuffing.
But also, though, too, I do like actually stuffing the bird with the warm filling, only because it actually enhances the flavor of the bird as well.
Mm, it does. Now now you're getting me hungry, man. I'm going to start panting like your St. Bernards. I'm doing wild rice stuffing. Okay, so with wild rice stuffing this year, what should be my ratio of wild rice to bread in your mind?
Well, generally with wild rice stuffing, what I do, I don't use bread at all.
Okay.
And then you can go ahead and use bread, but the whole thing with the wild rice stuffing, a lot of times having, and what I do instead of bread, I mix my wild rice with white and brown rice for texture and getting that puff rather than using bread.
Can you, would you advise to, if you have wild rice, and even with your microwave technique, would you stuff the wild rice stuffing into the bird, or would you rather say, you know what, with wild rice, let's keep it out?
Oh, no, I'd stuff it in the bird.
Okay. All right.
Because rice doesn't have a lot of flavor, really. I mean, wild rice has a good texture and that earthiness, but what you're going to find is actually you're going to get the flavor from putting it in the bird.
There you go. Are you doing green bean casserole, or have you got a fancy schmancy casserole?
I've done that with onion rings before. You know, I'm doing the Brussels sprouts. I'm doing a broccolini for something, because the green bean casserole, it's fine. But the whole thing is, I've kind of been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. I will probably be carved and served up myself if I don't deliver a green bean casserole on Thanksgiving.
Now, what I do with mine, though, when I have done it, I do onion rings instead of the French fried onions typically. So I actually make onion rings, wow, which are spectacular on top of it.
That sounds so damn good. The minute all of a sudden, I kept thinking of like Gordy's Hi-Hat up in Cloquet and getting their onion rings and making a green bean casserole. That, holy God, that would be amazing.
And then also, too, what's nice is I actually think I might even try that with a different style casserole. I might do a lobster wild rice casserole for Thanksgiving for fun. But I'm going to experiment with an air fryer just because I do like the oil, but the whole thing is that way they'll stay a little crisper.
Wow. And then what's going to be, you're crisping up what exactly, the onion rings?
Yeah, the onion rings. Now, I'm actually going to fry them beforehand, but I'm going to use my air fryer to re-crisp them rather than have them soggy.
Does that work? I mean, if I was just to go get some like onion rings at a good restaurant in town that has good onion rings and take them home, they get a little cool. You can put them in an air fryer and they'll be tasty again?
Yeah. Yeah, because the whole thing, the one thing, and I was kind of poo-pooing the air fryer thing, but the issue with that is that it gets it crisper. And also, too, if you want your onion rings, if you make them yourself, most onion ring batters call for flour. Use gluten-free flour. They're crispy for days.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, you're getting me there. Okay. So, dessert. I'm going through Terry. By the way, I got Terry's pies. He does amazing pies. Can a person still order them or no? You're all done.
No, we're shut off. Just because of the volume.
Oh.
My assistants are rolling crust right now. We've got to the point where we've got enough.
I tell them how much I appreciate it, because, okay, I'm getting, from Terry, I'm getting a cherry pie. Terry's cherry pie is one of the tastiest things I've ever had in my life. An apple pie, a pumpkin pie, and then, of course, the damn kids, because it's Thanksgiving, we're going to be non-traditional, chocolate silk pie. And so I got all four of them coming home with me. Thank you.
Well, actually, it's a chocolate mousse. It's even better because it's lighter.
Oh, God. It's going to be amazing.
Sometimes the chocolate silk pie can actually be quite heavy. They call it a silk pie, but I found that if I do a chocolate mousse with whipped cream, it's actually a better texture and flavor than, and it keeps longer than the chocolate silk pie, okay, which can weep.
Do you have a wine this year that you're, I mean, obviously, if you're going to do filet mignon, you can do a nice red. Is there a wine?
Well, I like Pinot Noir with everything.
Okay.
I got a Pinot Noir, a Sauvignon Blanc, and then I'm a big fan of Brut Rosé,
okay,
because unlike regular Brut Champagne, it can be very dry and not so great with food. The Brut Rosé has a softer edge to it, and it's absolutely spectacular with food.
Brut Rosé. Okay, I'm writing all this stuff down, man. You're making my Thanksgiving better. Final thing. Okay, so late afterwards, you've gorged yourself on food. The god awful football games are over. You're just sitting, relaxing. You want a little something afterwards. You got generally coffee. I'm going to give you a challenge here. Coffee. How do you jazz up coffee so it's nice? And if you have an alcoholic after dinner, which one do you suggest?
Now, here's the whole thing with the coffee. What I do is old school one. Okay, in your little thing with your coffee grounds, crack an egg and put some wheat germ in, and that erases all the bitterness of coffee. So that's actually really cool. And then afterwards, what I'm going to serve is a drink called a paper plane.
Paper plane. All right.
Which is bourbon, Aperol, Amaro, and lemon juice. Equal parts.
Okay. Wow. Dude, I do have to come to your house for Thanksgiving one year, man. I've got to come over there. I have got to come over. Because this sounds amazing.
Well, now that I have a kitchen. for the first time in 3 years, I have a home kitchen finally.
Well, congratulations. And of course, the St. Bernard's. Terry, you're magnificent. Once again, I want to make sure, if people want to find out about your cakes and your catering, where can they go for those?
If you just Google my name, Terry John Zila, everything comes up. I mean, thank God I don't have a prison record, because a lot of information comes up about me.
I will link to everything. I will link to, on the social media pages, I'll link to everything. If you can give me the recipe, I got the Brian recipe at home. If you can send me your recipe for leftover Thanksgiving pot pie, I'll make sure I get that posted as well, okay?
Fantastic. What I'll do is I'll send you the white cheddar jalapeno biscuit recipe.
Okay.
I think that's the best topper for that.
Okay, I'm all on board. That sounds magnificent. Sounds magnificent. Terry John Zila, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, my friend. All my best to you. You're one of the hardest workers I know. And once again, you got to come back and let us know about with the opening of the new coffee house, Hepcat. When that gets ready to go, come on back. We'll talk about that. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Have a great holiday.
You too. Take care. Terry John Zila. We'll take a break, wrap up the show. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The moving AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Love the St. Bernard's panting in the background. That's Terry still. All right, here you go. I'm going to give you a little bit of Thanksgiving love right now. Okay, so here's okay. I'm going to let you cook your own meal. If you do, here's my suggestion. First of all, carve out as much turkey as you need, all your sides. Get like plastic containers. And the night of Thanksgiving, when you get some time, separate everything out into individual meals and then freeze them. Because I'll tell you what, I love having, you have like completely set aside. Now, I'm not saying all of it. You want to have some of it for leftovers for the next few days, obviously after Thanksgiving. But having frozen Thanksgiving dinners in your freezer for a few days is just, a few weeks, magnificent. Absolutely magnificent, and that's not much better when you warm that up, and that's all of a sudden that smell, it just is like, oh, it's right back at you. Break down, if you do a turkey, and you're willing to give this a chance, go ahead, get a pot, and you can do this the next day, or you can do this. I'm going to do this on Saturday. Put the rest of the turkey in the pot, boil it, strain it. Keep the, obviously this, because you can get the meat that's off, any meat left on the carcass. Put it back in the pot, some celery, carrots, onions, get that going in there. And you can then, and here's the great thing about soup. You can add anything you want as far as your ingredients. You like corn? Put it in there. You like beans? Put it in there. You like, I put spinach in there. It's fantastic. And then you can put, your choice of what kind of noodle you want to put in there. Knock yourself out. Enjoy that. I would say that I've also, one of the things I really do enjoy doing is taking a little bit of red pepper, a little bit, and putting it in there, because having the turkey soup and then a little bit of heat to it, if you do get like a cold or something like that, oh my, there is nothing that will make you feel better faster than turkey soup with a little bit of spice in it. Mwah! There you go. You're welcome, America. Have a good one. We are back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.